Thank you, committee. All right, I call the February, what is today? Today is the February 7th Education Policy Committee to order. Our first order of business will be to approve the minutes. And Representative Keeler, have you had a moment to look at the minutes from February 1st? And I might switch over to Representative Hill, who's got it in front of him right now.
Sorry.
Have you had a moment to review the minutes? And would you please move approval on the minutes for February 1st?
Thank you, Chair. I have reviewed them, and I do move their approval.
Thank you, Representative Hill. Any discussion of the minutes from February 1st? All right. Hearing none, we will all in favor of approving the minutes from February 1st, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Nay? All right. The minutes from February 1st are approved. All right. So we did have to change the schedule today, given some constraints. And we are going to hear the first bill today is going to be House File 806, also known as the Barr Bill. And this is Chair Joachim's bill. And I will let you, Chair Joachim, if you would like to move your bill to be before the committee to be referred to Education Finance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I'd move House File 806 to be referred to Education Finance Committee.
Thank you, Representative Joachim. And then if you would like to introduce your bill and your presentation this afternoon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for hearing House File 806, and thank you to my bipartisan co-authors, including Representative Frazier, Bennett, Pryor, and Bickberg, that are on this committee. House File 806 invests $7.65 million of one-time money over a course of 3 years for grants to the Barr Center. Barr stands for Building Assets and Reducing Risks. The Barr Center, a nonprofit organization started in St. Louis Park, still based there, and is working with schools across Minnesota. In Minnesota and nationally, the Barr system is recognized as a highly successful way to improve student achievement and school environment for both educators and students. The Barr Center achieves results through on-site training, support aligning with a system within existing school structures, training materials focused on building intentional student-to-student and teacher-to-student relationships, professional development, and coaching. The program is implemented with a school over 3 years. In rigorous research conducted over an 8-year time period as part of the U.S. Department of Education's Investing in Innovation Grants, independent evaluation of the Barr system found that Barr was beneficial for students and teachers, was sustainable, and more importantly, like we like to say, scalable, and was cost-effective. You can see this echoed in the letter from the American Institute of Research that's in your packet, among other letters of support. This extensive research showed that Barr impacts had some of the greatest effects on students at risk of course failure or other academic challenges. Data shows that the Barr system was also successful in reducing opportunity gaps for our students. For teachers, the research showed that Barr not only strengthened the relationship and collaboration among teachers and school administrators, but also benefited their relationships with students. Barr training helps teachers by teaching them how to utilize school district data in order to identify barriers to a student's learning and then finds ways to remove those barriers. In the letter of support for House File 806, a principal evaluator from the American Institute of Research, AIR, states, because relationships are foundational to successful operations of schools and classrooms, the Barr model results in more lasting and sustainable changes than other investments and interventions I have studied. House File 806 appropriation would allow at least 30 more Minnesota schools to implement and benefit from the Barr system. The schools selected for this grant must be geographically balanced among urban, suburban, and rural districts and serve high concentrations of students in poverty or underrepresented students, including students that are from BIPOC communities. Madam Chair, there are letters, like I said, letters of support in your packets. I've also have testifiers with me today that can provide examples of successes they have seen in the implementation of the Barr system. My first testifier is Angie Jarabek. She's the founder and executive director of the Barr Center and also has a background in counseling and teaching.
Thank you so much.
Yes. Please identify yourself again for the record and please proceed.
Sure. Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Angela Jarabek, and I'm the Executive Director of the Bar Center. Building assets, reducing risks. Developed it right here in a first-ring suburb outside Minneapolis. I was a high school counselor, 1998. Half of the kids failed a course, fifth year in a row. I was not feeling particularly successful. Went to the principal to say, I'm not getting the job done. He said, it's not you. It's not our school. That's the national average. If you have a better idea, come back to me. So a couple weeks later, I'm sitting with my children. My six-month-old son's in my lap. My four-year-old daughter's playing across from me. And my four-year-old daughter proceeds to grab a handful of crayons and take a bite out of them. I will tell you what, I was not feeling particularly successful as a parent at this point either. So I'm like, professionally, things aren't going well. As a parent, things aren't going well. I called my grandma. So my grandma did not miss a beat. She immediately launched into the fact that she'd taken my daughter to Sunday school the week before and that my daughter had helped a girl who was really shy. And my sister had taken her to the playground, and she'd been really brave on the monkey bars. And all of a sudden, I realized I was a better parent because I had information from other adults when I wasn't there. And oftentimes, that was information about things that were going well. And I realized most teachers do not have that information. They have their 43 minutes that they can know that Hannah's not doing well in math and have no idea that Hannah's doing incredibly well in English, let alone that she's involved in her synagogue and involved in community gardens. At that point, I realized this was really a critical pace in terms of how we redesign schools. We have to open up those grade books and have teachers be able to share how students are doing, as well as focus on relationships. Because I realized the students failing was not a reflection of my colleagues. Adults who choose to dedicate themselves to the profession of education are incredibly talented. So this was not about them, nor was it about the students. The students are incredibly talented. This was a system realignment. So at the same time, I also felt a deep commitment to education as a profession and said I would not ask a fellow educator to do any work unless I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that it was effective. So we were the only model, as was referenced, to go through all three levels of the I3 competition. We've had 78 schools involved in randomized control trials, and we have 20 statistically significant impacts. Statistically significant basically means it's reliable. Besides impacting all students, the biggest gaps are being closed for students who are Black, Latino, as well as living in poverty. So we know that this is good for students, we know that this is good for staff, and we know that at this point at the nation, this is the largest research study that's been done. But now I'm going to have you actually have a moment to hear from our schools. We have a two-minute video, so at the same time the research was being conducted, I want you to be able to hear directly from the schools.
In my experience in education, the BAR program's been the program that I've noticed the most difference immediately. Just the way that the meetings are structured and when you see what's involved in it, it forces you to think about things in a different way and then to recategorize how you're going to use people's time.
I mean, utilizing the BAR method has really allowed us to turn the tide and show our students what they really can be when you have teachers who are diligent and intentional about impacting their lives.
BAR provided that platform for students to find themselves, to develop self-confidence, to learn how to socialize and communicate with each other, but at the same time, it also provided that other ability for our teachers to identify students before they slip through the cracks.
What makes it so special is the community that we have. The students are all one just giant family, and so are the teachers. And the teachers take every opportunity that they can to give us the opportunities that we need.
BAR has forced us to focus in a way that everyone owns every scholar. So when we are implementing interventions, we are discussing and collaborating to ensure that we are making decisions that are best for our scholars at all times. And so BAR has really transformed the way that we do things.
Intentionally, we meet every week, discuss every student, and we make sure that we find the thing that's for them. We get to know our students in a way that we know what their strengths are. We figure out what they really like, and then we try to match them up with the appropriate thing in our building.
BAR has really allowed us in the science department to get the kids engaged in what we're doing,
share ideas, elaborate on each other's ideas, and really just focus on their learning and how we can really improve and really bring learning outside of the classroom in a comfortable environment for the students.
But that is the beauty of BAR, is that it will work anywhere, any school. It works in rural America just like it does in urban. And it is because it allows a school to not have to reinvent everything they do, take what you're good at, what you provide students, but how do you connect those pieces and make it all work? I can honestly say in 26 years of education that BAR is unequivocally, hands down, the best program to help students I've ever seen.
All right, thank you.
Yes. So like the piece that I want to make sure I'm capturing is we have been working with 230 schools across the nation, over 40 in Minnesota, and many of these schools in Minnesota have participated in the most rigorous research that can be done, randomized control trials, which also just holds the profession up in a very professional way, and I want to make sure these educators are being applauded for the incredible work that they're doing. And with that, we have some schools that would love to share their story.
All right. So I do have a number of testifiers on the list, and if you want to come forward now, we can kind of stage you. As you know, we do have a full agenda today and a lot of interest in the bills that we're hearing. So if, again, you know, be aware of the 2 minutes that we're asking for testimony today, and hope that otherwise I will have to, I might have to interrupt you, and I would hate to do that. I do have Eric Norby next, so please introduce yourself for the record, and please proceed.
Hi, my name is Eric Norby. I'm the head principal at Armstrong High School in the Robbinsdale Area School District. Madam Chair, committee members, thank you for taking the time out for us today. As a principal, I've seen the difference BAR has made in 4 years since we began our implementation in my first year as head principal. It's through the hard work and commitment of our administrative team and our teachers, utilizing BAR as a framework, that our school culture has changed for the better. BAR has enabled us to meet both the academic and social emotional needs our students need. It has helped us empower our students to become excellent scholars and people. That is, it's not just another thing for teachers to do or an add-on, but rather a way for schools to better serve our students and our teachers. BAR has permanently changed Armstrong High School for the better in 4 years. As I shared in my letter of support, our graduation rate has increased 4% since 2018, our first year of BAR. Our students of color report feeling more of a sense of belonging due to the stronger relationships they have with adults and teachers in our building, and that BAR helps to foster. I invite all of you and any of you to come to Armstrong High School to see BAR in action. I would like to introduce you to 2 excellent educators who have continued to help monitor and implement the BAR program at Armstrong High School. Our BAR coordinators, Dr. Ann Beaton and Mr. Tim Loy.
All right,
Madam Chair.
Please proceed.
Okay, thank you. Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Ann Beaton. I'm a 27-year veteran teacher and have been a BAR co-coordinator for 5 years at Armstrong High School. Since early in my career, I have been a part of many attempts to build community and provide responsive support for all of our teachers and students at Armstrong. The BAR model has helped us finally find lasting success and gain traction in this effort. Teachers have told us they feel supported by the BAR model too. One new teacher said, "Thanks to BAR, I have felt supported and included in the community from day one. If teacher retention is a goal, I feel that BAR will play a big part in making that a reality." And a veteran teacher said, "I have gained student perspective through the eyes of another teacher on my team. My team's focus on student needs has resulted in my knowing students as people." And a counselor commented, "This is exactly what I imagined counseling would be like coming out of grad school." I urge you to fund the BAR model in other schools around Minnesota so more teachers and students can experience much needed support and success. Thank you.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Tim Lloyd, and I am a teacher of 30 years and BAR co-coordinator for 4 years at Armstrong High School. I come here to represent the student perspective of the effects of BAR at Armstrong High School. One student quoted that building relationships with new students on a personal level makes me feel more connected. When talking with another student, the student asked me, "How many students are at Armstrong?" I replied, "About 2,000, and his response was, "There is no way that there are 2,000 people in this building.
it feels way smaller. In terms of students feeling connected at Armstrong, in 2019-2020, which was our first year of BAR implementation pre-COVID, we had 493 students participate in fall and winter activities. This year, we have had 784 students participate in fall and winter activities. That is a 60% increase in participation over the past 4 years. I'm hopeful you will support this bill so thousands of students can feel the same sense of belonging that our students feel. New and veteran teachers feel supported, and the hard work, but good work of educators is the right work, getting traction for our students to succeed. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. I have a series of presenters from White Bear Lake. If you can come forward, Joe Held is the first on my list. If you can identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Joseph Held, and I am an associate principal at White Bear Lake High School in White Bear Lake, Minnesota. It's an honor and privilege to be here today, truly, to be able to speak to the power of BAR. You know, BAR, one of the slogans that you'll hear from them time and time again is that it is same students, same teachers, better results. This is not new curriculum. This is not new grading practices. This is using the same things that have existed, but streamlining it and making it super efficient and super powerful. So what I want to share with you, you'll hear undoubtedly from some of my colleagues from other schools, but two things I want to highlight is, first and foremost, the teacher support that this comes with. When our teachers can collaborate about specific children and students and not just about content and curriculum, it's really, really powerful to be able to have that buffer and that help and to be able to communicate based on things that they're learning about students. And we've had a number of first-year teachers or second-year teachers that have felt that they have this family of educators that are helping them with specific students and not just content. That's really, really big thing that's going to allow for teacher retention in a time where many schools are just searching to have more applicants for positions. Secondly, I want to just highlight that BAR has really transformed our ability to address reoccurring behavior problems, and also our academics have improved. So our passing rates have gone up, our behavior rates have gone down. And again, this has nothing to do with new content, new curriculum. This is just how are we as the adults helping our students. It's because of the success that we've had at White Bear Lake High School that our district has actually seen fit to include BAR in our middle schools as well as multiple of our elementary schools. And hopefully in the near future, we would want to do it to all of the schools in our district. We believe very strongly about this. So with that, I want to share the time with one of my colleagues, and hopefully you can learn a bit more about BAR. I urge you to support this.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Amanda Schrader, and I'm the BAR coordinator at White Bear Lake Area High School in the White Bear Lake School District. I'd like to share a story real quickly about a student whom we've seen grow in both personal confidence and his academic abilities this school year. After learning that one of our students was facing a number of challenges outside of the school day, a group of teachers created a project that would cover all standards that were required for their three courses. Our student took this project to heart and soared to success. Beaming with pride when he submitted the completed work, it was evident that now our student felt seen, welcomed, believed in, and for the first time, successful. On behalf of my colleagues from White Bear Lake Area High School and all of our schools in the district who are benefiting from BAR, thank you for the opportunity to share, and I'm hopeful that you will support this bill so more schools can experience these positive outcomes for their students and families.
Thank
Madam
you.
Madam Chair, I have a little soft spot in White Bear Lake. Our middle son teaches there at Sunrise Middle School, so thank you. I'm glad to hear it's coming to the middle school.
But we might have soft spots, but we have no preferences of all our schools and students.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for your presentation. The next group is from Detroit Lakes Area School District. And I do have Josh Omeng as first on my list. And if you would identify yourself and please proceed.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Josh Omeng. I am the principal of Detroit Lakes High School in Detroit Lakes, Minnesota. I'm honored to give you an outstate perspective about this amazing program today. My colleagues and I are going to share the tremendous impact that BAR has had on our high school in the past 1.5 years. Our community in Detroit Lakes services a population that is close to 25% American Indian, and also another 25% socioeconomically disadvantaged. It is very important to me personally as a school leader to find something that could help all students have success and ensure that no student would fall through the cracks. I can tell you that BAR has been that solution for us. Since we have brought this system into our school, I have seen a significant change in our school culture at every level. As we say, student to student, staff to staff, staff to student, the system truly does get results. And as you heard, it gets results here in the metro. And as you will hear here in a second, it also gets results in outstate rural little towns like mine. So my colleagues here from Detroit Lakes are going to share a little bit more about our results. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Kelly Klein. I am the BAR coordinator at Detroit Lakes High School. When looking at our data last year, our first year of doing BAR, we didn't want to compare last year's data to data that was affected by pandemic. So we compared it to the last school year that was not affected by COVID, the 18-19 school year. Our 2022 year-end data showed that our 10 through 12th grade students decreased failure rates 27%, and our 9th grade failure rates decreased over 42%. The initial data for our first semester of this school year shows we're crushing those numbers from last year. One of our biggest goals for this year was to target students with three or more Fs. These are students that are at risk of dropping out or not finishing high school. The number of at-risk students in our 10 through 12 grades decreased 44% from last year, and our 9th grade at-risk numbers went down 77%.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Callum Melcho, and I'm a social studies teacher from Detroit Lakes High School. Purely from a classroom teacher perspective, I can tell you that the structure BAR puts in place with its social-emotional lessons, they're called iTimes, is incredibly effective at building connections with my students. They're purposeful, they're intentional, and effective at reaching all students. I've been teaching for 31 years, and for a lot of those years, I felt like I was on an island when dealing with students who struggled. I tried to figure it out by myself. There was no thing set up for me to communicate with other teachers. It was throw something out there and hope it worked, and oftentimes it did not. With the BAR meeting systems, teachers communicate and share strategies on how to meet the needs of these students. We have far more collaboration and direction with helping students. The data that Mr. Klein has shared, reaffirms the effectiveness of this crucial part of the BAR program. We're hopeful that our district can expand BAR into our middle and elementary schools. We know that so many other Minnesota schools could benefit from BAR. Therefore, we ask for your support of this bill, and we thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony today. And could you just stay there for a moment? And I want to address our principal, Mr. Omein, on this. What was the kind of the uptake of this when you introduced it to your school and said, hey, whatever you're doing before, we're going to do it differently now? And how long did that process take?
Good question. I am a graduate of Detroit Lakes High School. I'm also a first-generation descendant of the White Earth Nation. So when I moved back home from the metro here, one of my big things was connections to school and having every kid in our school feel like they had a connection. And that wasn't always the case. And so the nice thing about this system is it's strengths-based for kids and for staff. And so when you come in and get these trainings by the BAR Center, it's the same system that we implement with the kids. We look at your strengths, right? We're not looking to change the people. We're looking to get better results with the people that we have. So it's easy, I guess, is the easy way to answer your questions. People want to come to work, especially after what we went through. They want to feel good about themselves. They want to have an awesome environment, and this system is the only system I've seen in my 21 years in education that does that.
Thank you. Thank you for your answer. To the bill author, I think this is the end of the presentation prepared, and now we have time for member questions and discussion. Representative Mueller.
you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Joaquin, for the bill. I was looking at the bill language, and frankly, this program seems amazing. I've been a teacher for almost 20 years and have been through many programs and initiatives that were supposed to, you know, be magic unicorns, and so it's good to see something that so many people have attested to being very effective. And so one of the things on the bill language in 2 says that the bar center must be directed towards, and then they list 4 different things that it must do. One of them is on line 2.4, which says improving teacher satisfaction and effectiveness, and I just wanted to know how that was measured.
Thank you. Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'll send that over to Ms. Jerbeck.
Okay.
Randomized control trials, we do surveys, and both focus groups with surveys. But the statistical significance in terms of the effectiveness of teachers has been measured by teacher voice. So the teachers are reporting, and because it was randomized, both within school, you ask a group of teachers their experience as well as others, and then between schools. So they've been able to say repeatedly they're feeling effective themselves, but also collective effectiveness, efficacy in terms of teachers saying we are feeling effective as a group.
Representative Mueller? Is that good? Thank you. Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. Representative Mueller stole my question, but I have another one, shocking. But so you talked about effectiveness being measured, but also it talks about effectiveness being measured from a teacher satisfaction, but also their effectiveness. So is that measured with the local TD&E plan, or how is teacher effectiveness measured within BAR?
And I believe we'll go back to Ms. Jerbeck.
Absolutely. All of this research was done, once again, from a national standpoint, and so teacher effectiveness also is measured by students' ABCs, attendance, behaviors, and coursework. So they're being assessed, their effectivenesses, on a broader scale, so not from, you know, kind of this statewide, but to say, are the students thriving in a variety of ways? So that is how the teacher effectiveness was assessed, and it, once again, was from a federal definition.
Representative, yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You talked about students. I'm wondering, is there a student survey component? Is there a student voice component within this?
Ms. Jerbeck.
Yes. There is. So there's both a student voice. The other piece that we work in, there was reference to the I times and U times. The lessons, which are weekly given, is collecting student voice constantly. So this is what we are trying to build into the regular day. So like an example of a lesson would be, what's on your plate? The teacher participates as well as the student. So I would say, I have 2 kids. I like to run for pleasure. The students are doing the same thing. So you're collecting constantly the student voice and the student experience. So you're not necessarily having a snapshot at the end of the year. Rather, you're hearing on a regular basis. So that's a critical part, to be able to have student voice coming forward and teachers be able to hear it and respond.
Thank you. Any other member comments or questions at this point? Okay. Representative Bennett.
Madam Chair, thank you. And, you know, I remember the BAR program from previous committees, and I really appreciate the data behind your program. I think you are exemplary amongst a few programs that really measure effectiveness correctly. So I thank you for that. That's why I do support the BAR program. And that's basically all I want to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Bennett. All right. Closing comments from Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members, for the clarifying questions and comments. Representative Bennett, you have good memory. I think when I was at Policy Chair, I had BAR come in and our innovative day to talk about what programs actually are out there that are working. So I appreciate that. Madam Chair and members, you know, thank you again for listening to our testifiers. Over the last month, we've heard directly from our schools about the challenges they're facing meeting their students' needs. From academics to mental health, we've heard from teachers asking for support and training as well, and from administrators who want more tools to do their work for all of their students. We have work to do to close our opportunity gap. We all know that. We've been talking about it. We've been admiring the problem. This is something that will actually help us close that gap and to address the problem. So there's clear need to provide Minnesota educators and students with evidence-based support, support that we confidently know will make a difference. From the testimony we just heard from our schools that we have used this, that have used this program, the bar system is successfully addressing these challenges in our Minnesota schools and across the nation. With House File 806, we have an opportunity to act now and bring this evidence-based system to additional Minnesota schools. The program, once again, is scalable, sustainable, and cost-effective. Thank you for consideration, and I would appreciate your support for House File 806 as it moves on to education finance.
Thank you, Representative Youakim. Seeing no more discussion on this, Representative Youakim renews her motion to re-refer House File 806 to the Education Finance Committee. All in favor of this motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion carries. And our bill is advancing. Thank you, Representative Youakim. Thank you, testifiers, for being with us today and for providing your perspective. And we are excited and glad to hear about this particular program. I think there's going to be a shifting of audience here, and we'll wait for that to get settled in before I turn over the gavel. But we can bring up our next testifiers. I'm not going to do one of you can use it. Yep. Yep. But I'll take my paper. And I'll take my So at this point, we're going to hear our next bill, and which is from our governor's office, and I will be the chief author, listed as the chief author, so I am turning the gavel over to Representative Hill.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. Our final bill for consideration today is House File 1269. It's from Representative Pryor. And remember, it's our intention to lay this bill over by 4:30 p.m. Representative Pryor, would you like to motion House File 1269 before the committee to lay over for further consideration?
So moved, Mr. Vice Chair.
Wonderful. Now that the bill is before us, Rep. Pryor, please state your name for the record and give us an introduction of the bill.
Thank you. I am Representative Lori Pryor. This is my bill that I am the chief author of, that we are introducing what is known as the Governor's Policy Bill. We are honored to have with us our representatives from the Department of Education that will actually do the presentation of the bill. Something I can tell the audience members is that We are introducing the bill right now, but this is just to get the information out, and there'll be further consideration of many of the policies that are brought forward today in further meetings. And so that, for people new to this process, is what we mean by being laid over. It's still in this committee, something that we're still considering, and we'll be working with all the way up until the end of our committee work this time. So. Thank you, Vice Chair, for allowing me my opening remarks, and I will turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you, Rep. Pryor. And MD, we welcome you to the committee. And as each of you in turn get to your part of the presentation, please state your name for the record as we move forward. Glad you're here.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Ado Suni. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education, and thank you for the opportunity to present on the Governor and Lieutenant Governor's 2023 Education Policy Bill. And thank you to Chair Pryor for carrying this package. This policy bill is predicated on the Due North Education Plan and seeks to work toward the goal that every child receives a high-quality education, no matter their race or zip code. Focuses on centering our students and all that we do and builds Minnesota's world-class education through a safe and welcoming environment with caring and qualified educators so that students are seen as unique individuals, valued and heard as they come into our school buildings every day. We hear about embedding more inclusiveness and rigor into our academic standards to ensure all students receive a high-quality education. Through our American Indian Education Package, we are looking to create a more supportive teaching and learning environment that not only enhances our American Indian students' learning, but supports families. All students will deserve to have the best chance to succeed in school, and that means having innovative and non-exclusionary approaches to keeping them there when they may face behavioral challenges. Our students and schools thrive when we have well-supported and valued educators who are qualified. And those are just some of the major themes that you're going to hear about from us today as we talk through some of the major policy components in this bill. And joining me today, I have my government relations colleagues, Shayna Morse and Megan Ariola. And with that, I'm going to start with the substantive portion of the presentation. We'll start with the presentation on academic standards. The policy bill first makes a number of changes in this space. First, we'd like to embed the contributions and history of American Indians and tribal nations into our academic standards. It's critical that all students are taught about the topic, and we've heard in this committee when discussing Indigenous Peoples Day how much we as a society need to improve here with our knowledge base. You will hear more about Indigenous education for all later on in the presentation from my colleagues. We're also seeking to embed ethnic studies into our academic standards, much in the same manner. This will ensure that all our students have the opportunity to learn about the contributions and histories of the diverse people we have in our state and country. We're seeking to make it absolutely clear in statute that when standards come up for review and revision, that MDE has the authority to engage in rulemaking without seeking new authority in legislation. For mathematics and science, the majority of the confusion relates to traditional course names provided in statute, rather than satisfying the Minnesota academic standards. So we're looking to make some language adjustments there to make it clear and to align with the standards revision that we've engaged in over the past few years. As you heard earlier this week, or earlier last week, we are seeking to delay the review and revision of the physical education standards to allow more time for educators to implement the current standards to avoid confusion through the field on whether the current standards are needed to be implemented. On the next slide, the proposal related to agricultural programming at schools serves to clarify that agriculture includes food and natural resource pathways, as well as within the licensure cluster, that MDE approves programs, not departments, and to correct an error in statute that points to an incorrect subpart of the rule. We are adding arts to this list of required statewide standards rather than the locally developed ones. We're clarifying that, and then adding media arts to statute as an arts credit option. Currently, there's a single line in Minnesota statute which directs each school district to establish its own standards in career and technical education. This language provides little guidance about the rigor or alignment of those standards. Additionally, this language is silent on how frequently the standards should be reviewed and updated. So this proposal will provide clarity to local school districts by listing their resources school districts should reference while establishing their own standards in career and technical education. And finally, for my section, we're recommending that we reduce unnecessary student testing by eliminating eliminating off-grade questions on the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessments. Those are not used for any purpose at this point, so we seek to eliminate those. And with those, I'll pass it off to my colleague, Shannon Morse. Oh, pardon me. My apologies. I'm supposed to be leading this much too. On the next slide, we have some adjustments that we're making for the Online Learning Act. We came with the proposal last year, and instead, you're going to see a lot of language change on the bill proposal. This is a repeal and replace. The current statute is written in, we believe, in a confusing manner. So not only are we going to make some policy adjustments, we're also just going to make the whole statute clearer. So we're providing definitions. We are moving to, rather than an approval process for online, rather than an approved online learning entity, districts and charters will be able to provide online instruction as a learning or teaching and learning modality, and we are shifting to a continuous improvement model. We will retain approval for districts and charters that are providing supplemental online courses. So those are courses that are provided to students that are not enrolled in their districts, whether they be resident districts or open enrolled students. So there will be still be a component that requires approval from the department. And then we are making some changes verifying that school districts responsible for education programs in day and residential care and treatment facilities may utilize the state approved online learning programs in home school districts and charter schools in fulfilling their responsibilities for education programs and services in those facilities. And now, with that, I will conclude my portion and pass it off to my colleague, Shayna Morris.
Thanks. For the record, Shayna Morris, Assistant Director of Government Relations at MDE. And I'm going to pick up here on slide 6. So this bill includes a robust package of policy changes intended to support American Indian students, recognize their unique identities and needs in the space of education, and enhance clarity on existing provisions related to American Indian education, aid, and programming. Starting out on this slide with a change related to sacred tobacco, American Indians have used traditional tobacco for centuries for ceremonial, religious, and healing purposes. This bill adds permission for American Indian students to carry a medicine pouch containing loose tobacco as part of traditional spiritual and cultural practices. The bill language also makes it clear that American Indian students may wear items of cultural and religious significance at graduation ceremonies. An item such as an eagle feather is a sign of academic success, and so we wanted to make that clear in this language as well. Last on this slide is a proposed change to how we handle mascots at schools in Minnesota. Not all mascots honor American Indian people. All mascots modeled that way. The characters and stereotypes of American Indian mascots can be harmful and perpetuate negative stereotypes. And so this bill would prohibit a public school district or charter from adopting a name, symbol, or image of an American Indian tribe, custom, or tradition as a mascot, nickname, logo, letterhead, or team name. A process is provided here so that the exemption to the prohibition can be sought if a community feels that the mascot's not derogatory or harmful. That process would engage the 11 tribal nations and the Tribal Nations Education Committee, or TNEC. On slide 7, the bill adds provisions around the development and implementation of Indigenous education for all, which Mr. Uni mentioned earlier. Specifically, it strengthens and clarifies language on what's embedded into the academic standards related to Indigenous education and how feedback is received. The bill also provides definition of what an Indigenous education for all program should look like and accomplish, including a report to the legislature on a needs assessment to inform the development of future resources. The bill would also add TNEC and Minnesota's tribal nations to the list of representatives the commissioner is required to consult with during the academic standards process. This is already occurring, but making it formal ensures consistency going forward. Last on this slide is requiring that a district or school that receives American Indian education aid and serves more than 100 state-identified American Indian students provides those American Indian culture and language classes, presumably with a portion of that funding. On slide 8, districts in the state with 100 or more state-identified American Indian students would be are required under section 124D.76 to have a community coordinator. This language seeks to ensure that full or part-time positions are dedicated to American Indian education programming versus being an add-on or an additional duty of another employee with other main job duties. Next, there are some cleanup changes to clarify that the state-identified definition of American Indian student is used for education purposes. This ensures that American Indian education students who identify as more than one race are properly identified as American Indian, which the federal count and definition does not adequately do. And then last on this slide are some minor changes to the role of the American Indian Education Director at MDE. Moving to slide 9, first on this slide are changes to improve the American Indian Parent Advisory Committees in terms of how they function and who participates. Districts or schools receiving American Indian Education Aid are required to have parent advisory committees to guide the district decisions on how to invest those funds and support American Indian students. Changes in this bill would make sure that the members of those committees are actually parents or guardians of American Indian children. Clarify that we're using the state definition for purposes of determining when a committee must exist, and providing a process for committees to review program offerings that are extended to American Indian students. And last, the bill would make it clear that educational data may be disclosed to tribal nations regarding tribally enrolled or descendant students. Next, moving on to discipline, the bill includes a holistic set of recommendations that are interconnected but accomplish different goals related to discipline in schools. The reasons for advancing policy promoting alternatives to exclusionary discipline are many. To this end, the bill, perhaps most notably in this area, seeks to minimize the use of suspensions for kindergarten through grade 3 children. The policy solution here acknowledges the developmental stages of children and its premise on the belief that students should not be punished for behaving in line with their current cognitive and emotional capacity. We also know that the practice of suspending our youngest learners is a major contributor to discipline disparities. During the 2018-19 school year, Black students received 44.8% of all K through 5 suspensions, while making up only 11.6% of the student population. The change would still recognize that there may be times when a removal is necessary. The expectation would be that all non-exclusionary measures are exhausted and there's an ongoing safety threat before a child is disciplined using those exclusionary practices. Other changes in this package include creating a clear definition for the term non-exclusionary discipline and requiring the use of those practices within reason, ensuring students have access to make-up work and alternative education services, prohibiting the use of suspensions to address attendance and truancy concerns, requiring school boards to adopt a policy, to adopt a complaint process, as part of their school discipline policy, and then creating a clear definition and reporting standards for pupil withdrawal agreements. And I'll just acknowledge proactively right here, we understand there are some concerns and are committed to continuing the conversation on how those are tracked and reported. And then finally, my section will conclude on slide 11 here with a handful of provisions related to early childhood. Related to enrollment, this would clarify, the bill language rather would clarify, districts could provide priority open enrollment into kindergarten for students who are currently enrolled in a voluntary pre-kindergarten or school readiness plus program, but not requiring it, and allow families to choose that their child may receive early childhood special education services in a non-resident district if the child attends a Head Start or licensed child care program in the district. Absent this permission, our option for families, rather, many children that would benefit from those ECSE services might not otherwise receive them. There are three changes in the bill related to early learning scholarships of note, making a child in need of child protective services automatically eligible for a scholarship, making sure that we're not adding undue paperwork at that difficult time in the family's life, adding children of incarcerated parents or children receiving child protective services to priority eligibility for scholarships, changing the timeline to select a program from 10 to 3 months in order to promote more access for the children to receiving high quality learning experiences and reducing unused scholarship awards. And then finally, the bill would make a practice that was utilized during the pandemic permanent by making a virtual early childhood screening option when health concerns exist allowable. We know that early intervention is key and screening is key to identifying those early intervention needs. Do a technology handoff.
Yep, thank you. We're going to do a little computer shuffle here. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Megan Adiola. I'm the legislative coordinator at MDE. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm going to be walking us through the final slides here. So as we testified to last week, I believe, we do align with the Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color and American Indian Teachers on their goal of setting a statewide goal to increase said teachers by 2% each year by 2040. As part of MDE's public engagement process, we hear time and time again from our communities that students need educators who reflect the diversity of our state in order to thrive in their educational experience. Providing students with a variety of life experience, personal connection, learning styles, geographic origins, and cultural diversity at the head of their class helps them develop their own best learning styles, and it also supports the development of their aspirations and future goals. We also carry language similar to the coalition regarding modifications to the world's best workforce and achievement and integration strategic plans. The provisions that we are adding here reflect, again, what we've heard from our communities, that districts and schools need to look at cultural responsiveness and equity not as an afterthought, but as a conscious conversation during the formations of these plans. In the same vein, by requiring assessments of both teacher and principal progress toward cultural responsiveness as part of their regular evaluations, affirms that belief that these are important aspects of the school experience, not only for students, but for other teachers and school staff as well. We also carry a provision in the coalition's bill that requires a written policy prohibiting discrimination and retaliation towards teachers for incorporating into their curriculum contributions by persons in a protected class. As we mentioned, as more and more teachers are feeling vulnerable and feeling stressed about teaching a well-rounded and accurate account of their subject area for fear of disciplinary actions, this provision would provide statutory protections for teachers to just do their jobs. We have had a lot of conversations in education committees over the past few years about this pathway to Tier 3. MDE is proposing to remedy some concerns raised by teachers and education partners who are concerned about this loophole, but also not penalizing teachers who are exploring this option as a way to get from a Tier 2 license to a Tier 3. So our language does include a grandfather clause that would allow licenses that have been issued on June 30th, 2023 or prior, that they would be able to continue to use their years of experience to progress toward a Tier 3 license. We are also looking to eliminate a statutory requirement that all Tier 3 and Tier 4 relicense applicants complete a basic skills test. MDE really does see this as a way to retain our teachers by removing a barrier to relicensure that we have heard has dissuaded candidates from relicensing in the past. By the time a teacher receives a Tier 3 or Tier 4 license, they have already proven through testing, education, demonstration, and the initial licensing process and portfolio work that they have the necessary basic skills required to teach at their level. Making them take a test for something for which they have already proven their proficiency just doesn't make sense. We are also looking to remove prohibitions on joining collective bargaining units and receiving continuing contract rights for certain teachers. Minnesota has always been a state with labor at the top of conversation every year. By allowing some teachers to join unions, if they so choose, their collective local bargaining unit and, by allowing some teachers to join these units and receive these rights, but barring others from doing the same, leaves these teachers feeling less than or inferior to their colleagues. We all know that this is not the case, so removing this prohibition allows these teachers equal access to these unions if they so choose. We are going to jump to charter schools next. Last year, we heard a lot in education committees about unexpected and unannounced closure of charter schools and how that impacted families, students, and communities who relied upon them. There was tones of feeling like they were scrambling to get their kids to school. But more than anything, the question was, how did this happen? Minnesota charter schools are public schools, and as such, MDE wants them to succeed and serve the populations that they want to serve. By requiring a market need and demand study as part of the application process for new charter schools and new charter authorizers, which is already a common practice in many fields, including business, we can ensure that those newly opened charter schools are thriving, successful, and staying around. In the same vein, Minnesota charter schools are public schools, and therefore they are free to Minnesota students, and Minnesota students should receive priority for enrollment. Next slide. There's been some confusion in statute regarding when the term of a charter authorizer ends, and just adding language to clear that up in statute makes it clear that charter authorizers are still active and responsible for their schools until they withdraw or until the commissioner terminates that. There are a couple more, sorry. These two items regarding leasing space from the owner instead of subleasing and prohibiting an affiliated building corporation from supporting more than one charter schools goes to the aforementioned goal of ensuring that charter schools are thriving, successful, and are staying around for as long as their students and families need them. This makes sure that the attention that charter schools need and deserve is given to them. Finally, we have some modifications around our administration of the federal food service programs, including requiring, requiring child and adult care food program and summer food service program applicants to provide financial eligibility documentation as part of their application to MDE, putting a limit on how often legally distinct CACFP and SFSP sites can transfer sponsoring organizations to just once per year. There are some exceptions in there. Requiring a non-governmental organization to provide documentation to MDE verifying that their staff have completed training specific to these programs before their application is approved. Much of our nutrition staff's time during the pandemic was spent just fielding calls from the field, asking questions that we know are covered in trainings. So just by making this requirement, these trainings are free and available to them. And by making that requirement just ensures that our staff are spending their time focusing on their work at hand. Finally, prohibiting new SFSP sites from opening within a half a mile of an existing site unless the new program would not serve the same group of students, not serve the same meal type, or if there is a geographical barrier such as a highway or a busy road that would prevent students from being able to access the existing site. So that is all I'm going to marathon through at the moment. We at this time are finished with our walkthrough.
Wonderful. Well, we thank you from MDE, Ms. Morse, Ms. Ariola, Ms. Hooney, for providing that overview. We're going to move on now to public testimony. And before we begin, I want to remind testifiers that we are hoping to move forward with our business and lay this bill over by 4:30. So we're going to ask that your testimony adhere to 2 minutes or less. And I will jump in to let you know if you are moving past that two-minute mark. And so please accept my apology in advance if it comes to that. Just a note to the public, if you do want to submit written testimony, we will still accept that and get it distributed to members of the committee should you want to have your voices heard as well. Our first testifier is Matt Shaver, who's public policy for Ed Allies. We're going to welcome Mr. Shaver to the committee. And up next we have John Olson, who's going to be providing testimony second, followed by Ms. Dana Smith.
All right.
Please, Mr. Shaver.
All right. Chair Hill, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Matt Shaver. I'm a teacher and I'm the policy director at Ed Allies, which is a statewide education advocacy nonprofit. I'm here to provide our thoughts on Governor Wall's education policy bill. We see a number of policy provisions that would improve the experience of students in schools and improve the relevance and rigor of instruction. We support a clarification to the lunch shaming definition on lines 21.12 through 21.13 that makes clear what was already obvious. Alternative meals for students are inherently demeaning and the practice must go. We also support the updated definition for how students qualify for limited or interrupted formal schooling on lines 33.15 through 33.27. This is a significantly more inclusive definition that will simplify the identification process and ensure that students won't miss out on needed supports due to technicalities. Policy contained in Article 3 on American Indian Education would move our state closer toward honoring indigenous communities by eliminating racist mascots and allowing for tribal regalia at graduation ceremonies, while also centering indigenous voices and decisions on core academic standards. We also see Governor Walz leading boldly on improving school discipline practices and outcomes in Article 5. Ed Allies is a proud partner of the Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition and are thrilled to see limits on overused and inequitable push-out practices for our youngest learners, coupled with clear definitions of non-exclusionary discipline, which will foster an environment where students are welcomed, supported, and able to learn because they will be in school. Finally, we're disappointed to see the proposed changes to tiered licensure in lines 83.12 through 83.15 that would eliminate the Tier 2 to Tier 3 experience pathway. This pathway isn't a loophole. It's a promise. And this proposal breaks that promise to Minnesota educators who signed up to teach in a pandemic that if they met the statutory qualifications for a Tier 2 license and taught effectively for 3 years, they would earn their Tier 3 license. This proposal could close the door in the faces of around 1,000 Minnesota educators. And in a state where 6% of teachers are teachers of color, it is notable that 25% of all Tier 2 teachers are teachers of color. This proposal would also send a clear message to the 99 educators who have already earned their Tier 3 license using this pathway that no one else should ever be allowed to make teaching a career the way they did. These are educators showing up every day for kids, and they belong. Given the teacher shortages and lack of diversity in our teacher workforce, this proposal would be counterproductive to efforts to eliminate shortages and increase teacher diversity. We should not be taking away opportunities for people from diverse and non-traditional backgrounds to make teaching a career. We thank the governor and Chair Pryor for their leadership and look forward to working with both to ensure a final policy bill does right by students and educators. Thank you for your time today. Thank you, members of the committee, for your public service to our state.
Thank you, Mr. Shaver. John, with apologies, we're going to move first to Ms. Lori Harper, who's the education director at Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. John, you'll follow right after her. If you'd like to take a seat up front, we'll move to you next. Following John's testimony, we will hear from Dana Smith.
Thank you for allowing me to provide this testimony. There was a miscommunication. Our tribal chairman was supposed to be here today to provide the comments, so these comments were written for him. I'll do my best to imitate. Just kidding. Miigwech. It was a long drive. I'm Lori Harper. I'm the Director of Education for Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. And real quickly, I know you're limited for time. Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe supports the tribal data sharing. Tribal educational agencies and departments should have equitable access to American Indian student data that is at least on par with the local educational agencies. Equitable access to our student data allows us to inform our services and programming and allows for better partnerships with the state and the LEAs on addressing myriad of challenges our students face: attendance issues, disciplinary disparities, and low graduation rates. Of course, Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe supports tribal regalia at graduation ceremonies. American Indian students should be allowed to wear tribal regalia or objects of cultural significance at graduation. An example of cultural significance is the eagle feather or plume, as it is the highest honor that an American Indian can receive. It is often bestowed upon our graduates of high school and college students as they have succeeded in a setting meant to eliminate us. We are not so far removed from the boarding school era, and our children have honored not just themselves and their families, but our tribal nations through their achievements. On the academic standards, Section 2 of Minnesota Statutes 2022, Section 120B.021, Subdivision 2, is amended to read, Subdivision 2, you have it in front of you in there. On the standards development, the commissioner must consider advice from at least the following stakeholders in developing statewide rigorous core academic standards in language arts, mathematics, science, social studies, including history, geography, economics, government, and citizenship and the arts. And as the tribal education director for Leech Lake that represents the Tribal Nations Education Committee for Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, as well as the voice of Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe today, we would appreciate the amendment to include number 6, representatives from the Tribal Nations Education Committee, period. Indigenous education for all. Of course, Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe supports this, and the state must provide the expectations and requirements for the development and implementation of Indigenous education for all. Without the statutory requirements provided by the state, in partnership with the Tribal Nations Education Committee, the LEAs will simply ignore the Indigenous Education for All curriculum. We know that because we've developed curriculum back in 1974, and I have copies of it. State count of American Indian students. Minnesota Department of Education must use the state count of American Indian students in all of their departments. The federal definition limits the count to only those students that are tribally enrolled. They eliminate us to other. We become othered at the federal level. In our family, if you're born into this family, you are recognized as an Anishinaabe or an Indian person. The blood quantum and identification was not of our design and was actually created to cull us. So, Miigwech, those are the words of Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe.
And if you could please move to conclusion. Thank you.
Yeah,
That's my conclusion.
Oh, wonderful.
Miigwech, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Director Harper. We appreciate it. Up next, we have John Olson, followed by Dana Smith. And following Ms. Smith, we'll hear from Caitlin Snyder.
Good afternoon, Chairman and members of the committee. I'm John Olson. I'm a board member of the Minnesota Science Teachers Association. About a year ago, I retired from MDE, where I was a science specialist. I oppose the proposed changes in graduation requirements for science that are in lines 5.25 to 5.30. The current graduation requirements have three parts: credits, courses, and standards. Three credits of science, including one credit of biology, one credit of chemistry or physics, and one elective credit, which is a little bit nebulous. Within those courses, students must satisfy all the standards in earth and space science, life science, and either chemistry or physics. The proposed changes would remove the specific course requirements. This change would weaken the graduation requirements and leave ambiguity about what courses schools should offer. It would provide inequities in science education for all our students. In addition, the language is inaccurate. There are no biology standards, and the 2019 standards do not have high school physical science standards. Instead, the Minnesota Science Teachers Association recommends that the graduation requirements be revised to specify one credit of biology, one credit of chemistry or physics, and one credit of earth and space science instead of the elective credit language. This would be consistent with the science standards, which are organized in that fashion. Minnesota has a well-connected system of science standards, courses, and teacher licenses that assures that students experience high-quality instruction and well-planned curriculum from teachers who have content knowledge specific to the courses. Minnesota has experienced high achievements in national and international science tests. An analysis done from SciMathMin, a collaboration of schools, businesses, government, and higher ed, noted that strong standards, similarities of curriculum, and rigorous licensure requirements played a significant role in these accomplishments. The proposed science graduation revision would erode that strong, coherent system. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. We'll move on next to Dana Smith, who will join us remotely. And following Ms. Smith's remarks, we'll hear from Caitlin Snyder and then Natalie Kisper.
Hello, can you hear me all right?
We can. Please proceed.
Chairperson Pryor and Education Policy Committee members, my name is Dana Smith from Bemidji, and I come to you as a veteran science teacher, a member of the Minnesota Science Teachers Association, and as someone who is deeply concerned about the consequences of some of the proposed language in HF 1269. Minnesota has long been a leader in education. This commitment to our students is affirmed in our call for rigorous academic standards, statewide accountability and graduation requirements that are specific and meant to prepare all Minnesota students for college and career readiness. I worked on the 2019 Science Standards Revision Committee. We created consistency and alignment with the current statute requiring three credits of science by writing standards and benchmarks for the physical sciences, chemistry or physics, life science, and earth and space science. This allows for equitable consistency and content focus in licensure. In fact, MNSTA is advocating for 120B.024 Subdivision 1 Graduation Requirements Section 3 to read three credits of science, including one credit of biology, one credit of chemistry or physics, and one credit of earth science. This would further align the standards with graduation requirements. We know this is needed because in a recent MNSTA survey, only 24.7% of schools that responded offer a required course in earth science, and less than 40% offer elective courses that address only some of the earth and space science standards. It is long past time earth science is recognized and elevated to the importance that the other sciences are afforded and that our industry partners, economy, and workforce continue to call for. The proposed change in graduation requirements outlined in HF 1269 will effectively remove these assurances and create even more ambiguity and inconsistencies in an already confusing interpretation that will lead to inequitable access for students. Science is unique and requires an approved preparatory program. Licensure and courses taught to be in alignment is best way to serve our students. The proposed language in HF 1269 would allow for standards to be placed in any course, remove alignment with licensure and teacher preparation programs, and remove any statutory oversight of the content that students have access to in their districts. Minnesota students deserve our very best in terms of equitable access, teacher preparation and content expertise, consistency and best practices. This proposed legislation will not create clarity, but will degrade the rigor and access that all Minnesota students deserve. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. We'll go next to Ms. Snyder and follow her with Ms. Casper.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Caitlin Snyder. I'm a lobbyist with Education Minnesota, representing 86,000 educators across the state. I would like to thank Chair Pryor and Governor Walz for bringing forward a bill that strengthens supports for our students and for our educator workforce. I will echo the supportive comments from Ms. Harper relating to embedding American Indian supports across all levels of our education, including the Indigenous education, which all of our students need access to, and the data pieces. We are also appreciative of the inclusion of ethnic studies and the language relating to discriminatory behavior in the lunch program. Relating to workforce concerns for our members, as everyone knows, there's a teacher shortage, there's a paraprofessional shortage, and there are pieces in this bill that will help address that, including language that prevents any discipline against a teacher who touches on subjects related to federal protected classes will ensure that there isn't some of the lashback we've been seeing in other states across the country. Allowing our Tier 1 teachers to be able to organize means that these teachers who might be the most vulnerable in terms of workload or other expectations have protections is very important. Ensuring our principals have culturally responsive training and that our ECFE, ABE teachers have due process protections will make sure that our workplaces are more protective of our educators. I will add that the language referred to as the loophole, you'll hear a lot about this tomorrow. I can save some of my comments for then. But making sure that teachers have training in content and the science of teaching, there are 60 years of research to back up that this is the way to keep educators in the classroom. So this is both a support for educators and a support for our students as they help to build longer lasting relationships in the classroom. Finally, there are some areas we were hoping to see improved. I would echo the comments from Mr. Olson and Ms. Smith. This isn't a clarification of our science standards. This is abdicating the state's responsibility for having a level playing field for school districts. This will create more inequities as school districts that can afford teachers in biology, chemistry, and physics pursue that, and school districts that cannot afford it will be left behind, as will their students. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Wonderful. Thank you, Ms. Snyder. Next, we'll hear from Natalie Casper, followed by Heather Douglas, and we'll close with Karen Miller.
Hi, my name is Natalie Casper. I am a parent, a school board member, and a homeschool tutor. I reside in Dakota County. I'm here today to discuss the House Bill HF 1269. Due to the extensiveness of the bill, I will focus specifically on lines 26.28 through 26.34, and lines 77.24 through 79.18, and lines 92.5 through 94.5. I oppose the additions of these lines. These sections all outline what a school board and district must include in their strategic planning and world's best workforce goals. Our school district's goals is to have a rigorous, disciplined, and engaging environment where students can thrive in reading, writing, math, and science. According to the state of Minnesota's report card from 2022, out of all the students in the state, only 44.8% are meeting the state standards in math, 51.1% in reading, and 41.3% in science. Less than half of all students are meeting state standards. It should be the school districts that determine their goals with the input of their community. By adding non-academic requirements of ethnic studies to district goals, an undue burden is placed on schools, hindering the need teachers have to focus on the excellence of reading, writing, math, and science. According to the definition of ethnic studies in Section 1, Article 2, it would require students to learn the framework of cultural Marxism, teaching students to focus on power groups, to separate themselves, and view each other through the lens of oppressed or oppressor. It should not be the goal of the state or school district to require people to validate, affirm, and embrace ideologies that may go against their personal convictions,
religion, or an idea that seeks to control the thoughts, actions, and emotions of the citizens in which it's supposed to be serving. This breaks the First Amendment rights that protects individual citizens of America from government-mandated belief systems. Due to these reasons and the content outlined in ethnic studies, I ask that you consider removing them, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. We'll move next to Heather Douglas, please. Ms. Douglas, when you're ready.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for allowing me to speak here today. My name is Heather Douglas, and I'm an elected school board director for the fifth largest school district in the state of Minnesota. I also serve as a school board member for an intermediate school district that services 11 school districts in the metro area. I'm also a homeschooling parent of four children, some of whom receive concurrent education through our local school district in the field of special education. And today I speak in opposition to HF1269, addressing the language in reference to homeschool test reporting. In Minnesota, the management, collection, and response to letters of intent to homeschool is the responsibility of the superintendent alone. Superintendents already have a significant responsibility to manage a multitude of legislative mandates. Few have a staff person that is dedicated to homeschool data collection and support. MSBA, MASA, AMSD, MASBO, Edmond, Osseo Area Schools, and dozens of school districts and educational organizations across the state have included as part of the legislative platform that no additional unfunded mandates be included as part of their legislative platforms. They do not want to follow mandates that have not been fully funded. They also have addressed their significant concerns surrounding the critical staffing shortages throughout education. We cannot continue to require insurmountable data collection and paperwork without a clearly defined purpose for that data. Who will collect this data and how will it be used? Homeschool educators are required to test yearly using one of 24 approved nationally normed achievement tests. In order to opt out of testing for their student, they have one pathway to do so. They must apply for accreditation, they must pay the fees to be accredited, and have their full scope and sequence of their lessons plans be approved by HEBA, the only approved home education accreditation program in Minnesota. This significantly impacts families that cannot afford these fees, whose children need alternative testing methods. However, public school students are able to opt out of standardized testing with a simple request from their parent or guardian. Additionally, I believe it's important to address the difference in testing for homeschool students and public school students. Homeschool students must take a nationally normed test. Here in Minnesota, our students take the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessment, which is not a nationally normed test. The data collected from homeschool testing will not be comparable to the MCA data that's received from our students, and many school districts, including Osseo Area Schools, have already expressed their need for a more instructionally relevant exam, as the MCAs do not always provide for accurate representation of student achievement. Testing is one fraction of a student's achievement and their success. As an educator, a Hispanic woman, a Native American woman, and a mother, it is my belief that we all want our children to thrive in their educational environments. We desire equitable access to education and for each of our students to be seen as an individual and not a test score. Please consider eliminating this language from the bill. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Ms. Douglas. And our final speaker, please refrain from applauding. Our final speaker here is Ms. Karen Miller. Is it Karen or Karen? I'm sorry.
It's Karen.
Excuse me.
I respond to both.
Pardon me, Karen.
You. Well, members of the committee, Madam Chair and Mr. Vice Chair, it truly is an honor to speak before you today. My name is Karen Miller. I'm an English teacher, a home educator of 19 years to our six children, and a dyslexia advocate from Dakota County. Homeschoolers excel. 78% of peer-reviewed studies on academic achievement demonstrate that homeschoolers perform statistically better than those in traditional schools. Homeschool students also typically score 15 to 30% higher than public school students on standardized exams. Therefore, there's no justification in HF 1269 lines 3.7 to 3.9, which requires homeschoolers to submit their students' annual test scores to the superintendent. Furthermore, even parents of school-aged children have the right to opt their children out of testing. It is discrimination against homeschoolers to A, not allow us to also opt our children out of testing, and B, furthermore, to ask us to report our scores. As homeschoolers, our greatest concern is, what will the district do with our students' scores? We're very concerned this might lead to further restriction or discrimination against homeschoolers. Now, you might be concerned, what about struggling learners? Well, a Minnesota statute already requires homeschoolers to pursue additional testing if their students score in the lowest 30th percentile. Trust me, as an educator of a severely dyslexic learner, I have lived and witnessed firsthand the dedication of homeschool parents to persist in trying out different curriculum styles, exploring different tutoring options until we find the right solution for each child to succeed. In the process, we discover that they are not broken, they are gifted, and it is the freedom of the homeschool environment that lets them fly. No homeschool child is ever left behind. The reality is that greater government regulation will lead to less opportunity for individual optimization within homeschooling. Therefore, I urge you to vote no on HF 1269, or at least pass an amendment that strikes lines 3.7 to 3.9. Thank you very much for your time and your consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. We'll now move to member discussion. We'll start with Representative Lee. Oh,
thank you, Mr. Chair. I will allow the author to respond to other comments, but I just did want to uplift various parts of the bill that you know, I think are really important to our students in Minnesota and students across the board. I just want to have the members reflect back to the state demographers report that we had a couple weeks ago. Minnesota student body is changing, and we have to change along with it. So really grateful to the folks at MDE and the governor for putting forward this proposal to address some of the mascot issues, and also really uplifting ethnic studies. As someone who represents St. Paul, I'm really proud of our school district for making ethnic studies one of our graduation requirements. And so just want to thank the department for uplifting that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lee. We'll go next to Representative Bakeford.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Pryor. This bill is truly extensive, and I think it's 105 pages. And there are some pieces that are valuable. But simply, this bill is heavy on mandates and leaves little room for innovation and local control. This bill empowers people farthest from the classroom. Let that sink in. Farthest from the classroom. That includes all of us sitting at the table to make decisions about what happens. That includes the Department of Education. We are farthest from the classroom. We should be empowering our local school districts, our locally elected school board, and most importantly, our educators and parents to make the decisions that are best for their children. As talked about, this bill ignores the science of reading, removes accountability from teacher prep programs at a time that 51% of our students are meeting the MCA reading requirement. 49% of our students are not meeting grade level reading standards, and we're going to remove that? That is insane. In my professional opinion, this bill shows a complete lack of respect for what educators, parents, and those with a different point of view actually want. Educators and parents do not want to fund bureaucracy. We want to fund innovative programs that let our students fly and find their potential, like the ALC programs that we've talked about. Educators and parents do not want mandates. We want flexibility to serve our students. Oftentimes, these mandates make zero sense to those of us that actually do the job. Representative Hill, I'm sure there are pieces you would agree with that. Educators and parents do not want division. We want to talk about our past, but we don't want division. Frankly, I talked to an educator on Friday who is sick and tired of the division. What they actually said is, I want to teach math. The homeschool requirement, I would be curious who's asking for this, because I can tell you superintendents are not wanting this. I've talked to my superintendents. They don't want this requirement. MDE continues, and I've spoken very frankly to MDE, but the Department of Education continues to put educators in a lose-lose situation over and over. To the homeschool families that are here, please remember that this is not being pushed by your local superintendent. It's not being pushed by the teachers who love kids and want to serve kids. This is being pushed by a small few at the Department of Education. And frankly, educators are leaving. I'm almost done.
Thank you.
Educators are leaving because of the division. We as a committee have a responsibility to improve educational opportunities for our kids. We should be asking questions, why are kids leaving our schools? That's what I ask at my building. If a kid leaves, I ask them why they leave. And if there's an issue we have to fix, we fix it. That's the question that should be asked. We trust parents to make the educational decisions best for their children. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. We'll move next to Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pryor, I actually have a question for MDE. I don't know if Adosh or somebody is here. Through 44.17. I just have a clarifying question around it. So it's striking out Indian education liaisons and adding Indian education program coordinators. Does that mean that we're completely dissolving of liaisons in our district and we're now moving them to a title of coordinator?
Mr. Chair and Representative Keeler, no, that's not the case. Under the American Indian Education Aid that these schools receive, they are actually required to have an American Indian Education Program coordinator, which does fulfill many of the duties of the liaison, but it's a specific requirement for these schools that we have just heard it was not clear that they need to have a designated community coordinator for these programs. A liaison who exists in the schools could fulfill those duties so long as they are, it is a focused part of their work and not just a title.
Wonderful. Follow-up?
Okay, yep, follow-up, Mr. Chair. So the only suggestion I would add in this space, and you know, I've said it here before, I was an Indian education liaison for 12 years. It was my favorite job. And the one thing that we've seen in transportation is that there is an American Indian hiring preference, because I think it is absolutely paramount that individuals who are working with Indigenous students are also identifying as Indigenous as well. It's one of the things that we continue to talk about, that we see representation in the individuals that are in our schools. So the only suggestion I would maybe add or take back is that as we're hiring these positions that are housed under Indian education, because I know in my district, the coordinators and the upper level individuals who are making decisions about our students are not Native, and they're making decisions that are not culturally inclusive or infused, and it's actually breaking down what I think the whole system wants to do. So thank you for clarifying for me, because it kind of made me nervous for a minute, but I would add, if we're going to add that, if there's a way that we can make sure that we have some sort of preference. I know it can't be a requirement, but some sort of Native American hiring preference on it. And then I have other things that we'll talk about in other bills down the road, but also highlighting the fact that the lunch component is really important to me. We've talked about it in many spaces. Feeding our communities, if our kids don't have food, they just can't be the very best that they can be. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. If there's no objection, and I'd like to expand our meeting by about 5 minutes. We have two more speakers on the list. Representative Frazier, quickly, and followed up by Representative Bennett, and then some closing remarks. Okay.
I'll be quick.
Go ahead, Representative Joaquin.
Mr. Chair. I'm sorry for interrupting. There is a caucus 4:30 deadline, so if we could
Yeah, about 1 minute each, please, if possible.
Sorry, we're interrupting.
About 1 minute, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Madam Chair, for bringing this bill forward. I know that it's the duty of the chair to bring the governor's policy bill forward. We have to remember that we're another part of the body, and a lot of the work we're going to do here together is bills that our members bring forward, and the governor's policy bill is one thing that we look at. I just want to lift up the provisions in there that actually support educators. I have a lot of educators in my family, and I hear, number one, from them and their friends that the reason why they're leaving is actually because they're not feeling supported. And this bill has a lot of supports in there for teachers. I got a little confused when we were talking about literacy. We're going to have the Ed Finance bill through that is really supportive of the science of reading. I don't believe we're taking literacy out of our classrooms. So I just want to make sure everybody understood that. And I wanted to thank you and lift up the work around that Ms. Harper mentioned in her testimony, as well as the non-exclusionary discipline pieces that our teachers have also been asking for. So I look forward to the work this committee is going to do and Ed Finance is going to do. And thank you, Mr. Chair, for the leeway.
Thank you, Representative. Next to Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Pryor, for ringing this bill. I just want to speak to the ethnic studies strands piece. I think those are important. We've got an increasingly diverse student body that we're seeing on a daily basis, yearly basis in our state. And I think I have three daughters that have gone through K-12 here. Well, two are in the process of finishing up. And there hasn't been a year that hasn't gone by when they haven't said to me, Daddy, why don't I see more about myself in these books? Why don't I see someone that looks like me in front of the classroom? Why don't we have a focus on what it's like to be me? And so I'm happy we finally get to a point where we're going to infuse that within the curriculum, because it's important that we represent and encourage what the future of our state is going to look like. Whether we like it or not, this will be the future of our state. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first, I'd like to say I would have hoped this bill would have had like an entire committee, because it's a huge bill and we've obviously run out of time, but I'll just make comments. Representative Bakeford, thank you. He actually summed up a lot of mine. So I'm just gonna make one comment about the component that is targeting our homeschool students. We have 27,000 homeschool students in our state. We have 850,000 public school students. Why are we targeting the spec that's not even a problem when we have a log in our own eyes where half of our students are not proficient in reading and less than half in math? So I would hope that MDE and our governor would take those lines out. We do not need to target our homeschool students. They're doing great. Let's target where we need to make the best efforts to give our students the best education that we can. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. And we'll go for closing remarks. Chair, Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Vice Chair, Acting Chair Hill. Appreciate your efficiency in moving through this meeting with the comments that we have available. This is a bill that's been seen before. It's been basically, many of it has been passed in previous years with a few additions along the way. It's been discussed and vetted and is a priority of, I know, coming from our department, but also coming from the governor and the lieutenant governor of Minnesota, just reelected. So we know that these are the priorities of voters across the state as reflected in who they chose to lead the state. And so it's a bill that I'm you know, honored to carry, but it's also a bill that we'll be working forward with because, you know, no group has all the answers. And that's why it's being laid over, and which it would have been no matter what. But it's also laid over because we hear the bill, we take it from the governor's office and the presentation of it, and now we, with our own election certificates representing our communities, look at it and see how what we think improves it. There will be profound differences even at the end. And we can anticipate those, but what we're heading towards is not just this bill, but we'll be heading towards a package of bills that we'll be bringing forward to the floor, bills that will be addressing literacy, bills that will be addressing teacher retention and teacher recruitment, bills that will, in addition to this, be addressing this the unacceptable disparities we have in this state that we cannot continue with and that we have to take seriously. So I know that we have a good start. We have a lot of material to work with, very expansive, and we appreciate that because that's what we need. We don't need quick, easy solutions. We don't need sound bites. We need good work, and we need good policy, and that is the purpose of this committee. So another day in ed policy. Thank you, Acting Chair Hill, for leading us through this process.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. And with that, she renews her motion, and this bill is laid over. We are adjourned. Thank you.